Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the sweltering heart of Liberty State right now. It is, there was a friend of mine driving down near Irigon. I don't know if some of you know where that is, I'm sure, but it was 120 degrees on the car. Their mom already took a picture of it, sent it to me. And we're going to talk a little bit today about what's going on with the grid as well. But I hope everybody out there is staying cool. And if you don't have power or you need help, always know that you can message others out there. There's plenty of people out there right now that are willing to help where their power is still on, especially those of you with newborn kids. It's important to know that you're not alone. So anyway, I want to make sure that everybody knows that and staying cool out there, and your pets are staying cool as well. All right. I want to talk quickly about a couple of things, but first, remember this show is in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story. In the news, behind the news, it's not about right or left, it's about right and wrong. About our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. About not ending in prayer, but moving to action. And about the gospel of the kingdom. Isaiah 61, 1 through 4, the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord anointed me to bring good news to the humble. He sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim release to captives and freedom to prisoners, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn. To grant those who mourn in Zion, giving them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the cloak of praise instead of a disheartened spirit. So they will be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Then they will build the ancient ruins. They will rebuild these things. And this talks about even the United States right now. They will rebuild the ancient ruins. They will raise up the former devastations, and they will repair the ruined cities, the desolations of many generations. But you got to do all those other things first. And the kingdom of God is an active kingdom. It is not something that is just talked about, where you sit on the couch eating popcorn waiting for Holy Spirit to move. It's something that is very active, and we need to clean our own house first. And that is preaching the gospel of the kingdom. I want to talk quickly about the first thing. There are a lot of lies that have started to gin back up again. They've been pretty much dormant for a year or so. But the rhinos of Spokane Valley have started to gin up again things that have been conclusively disproven a long time ago. And so it's fascinating to me that they've chosen now to start doing this. Now, rhinos have sold out this country, and I'm going to get to a specific example of that here in a few minutes. But if you are not familiar with the term rhino, it is Republican in name only, or fake Republicans, or Republicans who are actually socialists in disguise, or who compromise and in effect are socialists. Now, socialists and communists have ever been the enemies of Christianity. The founder of modern socialism, Karl Marx, arguably was a Satanist. That's a topic for a separate day. You can read Richard Wurmbrand's book and read his story as well. And there's a tie into that because of the significance of today for Christianity. So we'll get to that as well. But my point here is that there's a reason the rhinos have suddenly reared their heads. And they want to do a massive change to bylaws in the Republican Party as well here locally. And these were the anti-Trump crowd. These were the anti-conservative crowd. These are the folks that had some of their ranks caught at a meeting with Marxists, and it was in the meeting minutes that we got a hold of a copy of that. In the meeting minutes that they specifically said they were meeting together to prevent conservatives from getting elected. So you have these fake Republicans teaming up, literally teaming up with socialists to try to prevent conservatives from being elected. So make sure your friends and your family know these things and that you're educating them on this, that not everyone who says they are a Republican, not everyone who says they're a Christian for that matter, is actually a Republican or actually a Christian. And you can tell this because these rhinos will spout the same narratives that the Marxists attack Trump with. They will use those same terms to attack local conservatives, calling the local conservatives racist, calling the local conservatives, haters and all this kind of garbage, even though all of that was conclusively disproven. These people do that. And one of the other things that they have recently done was become anti-veteran. And it was fascinating. They went to no lengths to try to attack veterans here in the local community, prevent them from being elected. So understand, these rhinos are rearing their heads for a reason right now. There's a timing issue. There, something must be in the offing here in the next couple of months for the rhinos to start doing this right now. And of course, you have the left starting to gin up stuff in the Socialist Review again. There's a reason for the timing right now. Pay attention to that. A reason for this timing that they're ginning this false narrative back up again. And this very clearly should signal to all of us something is in the offing. And we need to be ready to stand as patriots. And candidly, these rhinos need to be completely kicked out of any office that they're in. And as Christians, we should not vote for the duplicitous. And that's exactly what rhinos are. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, coming to us from Deb Kefile, a second round of U.S. airstrikes against Iran-backed militias in Syria and in Iraq. U.S. airstrikes against pro-Iranian militias in Syria and Iraq went into their second day, and this was second day yesterday, Monday. And this was after a fresh militia rocket attack on the U.S. base securing the Al-Amar oil field, Syria's largest in the eastern Deir ez-Zor province. Okay, so in the eastern part of Syria, this big oil field, the U.S. is guarding it, and at least 8 rockets were said to have hit the base, after which U.S. warplanes struck the Iranian Revolutionary Guard's largest rocket store in Syria and Iraq. Now, again, just the overview picture continuing. They're continuing to gin up war in the Middle East, as we've been talking about here for some months now. All right. Also on the international front, and I'm going to talk about vaccines here briefly. Okay, coming to us from Technocracy News. Technocracy News. European Union reports 1.5 million vaccine injuries, 15,472 deaths. I'm going to say that again. The European Union reports 1.5 million vaccine injuries and 15,472 deaths. The EU counterpart to the U.S. VAERS, and that VAERS is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System database, reports deaths and injuries that are likely understated because not all cases are reported. And that's actually correct. Very correct statement. So this is the European VAERS database. The UDRA Vigilance Database reports that through June 19, 2021, there are 15,472 deaths and 1,509,266 injuries reported following injections of 4 experimental COVID-19 jabs. And these are the Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and Janssen. Again, just math. 99.5% survival rate for most of America. Doesn't make sense to take a shot like that. Not even close. Also on the international front, and this also has to do with the national front, coming to us from WorldNet Daily. This article everybody out there should read. Quote, CDC at war with itself on vaccines, end quote. In a report that may have some observers wondering about today's Centers for Disease Control and its statements about COVID, an investigative reporter has documented an internal war over a study that provided misleading information to the American public. This comes from Cheryl Atkinson's efforts. She says the conflict developed a few years ago when evidence in a study showed a link between vaccines and autism, but the details were buried. I'm going to say that again. Cheryl Atkinson, a very well-known investigative reporter, says the conflict developed a few years ago when evidence in a study showed a link between vaccines and autism, but the details were buried. She reports an internal email from the CDC obtained through a Freedom of Information Act process reveals just how nasty things got, with one scientist calling another, quote, "You are a pathetic liar," end quote. The comment was on September 2, 2018, from CDC's Dr. William Thompson to Dr. Frank DiStefano, CDC's head of immunization safety. And this brings to fore what we've actually talked about on the show before, that there were intentionally buried statistics that should have raised the alarm several years ago on vaccines given to infants. All right, so we're not going to talk about that completely today, but I want you to understand that there's more truth coming out about what's going on regarding the COVID-19 gene therapy and then also vaccines given to infants. All right, on the national front, Fox News, Tucker Carlson is coming to us from Breitbart. Quote, "The Biden administration is spying on us. We've confirmed that," end quote. Tucker Carlson said the federal government was spying on him and those associated with his program, which Carlson said was revealed through a whistleblower within the government. According to Carlson, the proof was the whistleblower revealed details of a story they had been working on that could have only been known through texts and emails. Carlson said his team had filed a Freedom of Information Act request and called on the federal government to cease the behavior immediately. In addition to that, today, the Biden administration essentially dodged the question at a press conference. Okay, now, it is illegal to use the law enforcement and defense mechanisms of this country to spy on political opponents. And as the truth has come out, Devin Nunes has shown this. There's a movie, actually, on this documentary about what they did to Trump, and now they're doing it to political opponents. Folks, this has to stop. This is essentially a declaration, and I want you to hear this very carefully. This is essentially a declaration of war on America in the information sphere. And this can't continue, and the people that did this should be in jail. They should be tried and put in jail for it, and we need to stop talking about it. And that's what needs to happen. Now, if they're doing that to Tucker Carlson, I wonder how many people they've done that to and got away with it. I wonder if that could have been used against certain other people that were political opponents. And following this, also on Breitbart, advisor to Pentagon Counter-Extremism Group warns of protected speech crackdown. This is interesting. The Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin set up the Counter-Extremism Working Group in April, vowing to root out extremists, and ordered the entire military force to spend a day discussing extremism. Wow. And I want to just go through this part of it. Mike Berry, general counsel for First Liberty Institute and Marine Corps reservist, first sounded the alarm in a recent op-ed that said that this working group was looking to formulate a new definition of extremism that could include constitutionally protected speech. I just don't know how you can reconcile the Constitution with trying to criminalize someone's thoughts and beliefs, he said. This is Barry. Now, it looks like they are continuing to move in this direction, and the Tucker Carlson part of this is, just, like I said, just part of this. Now, I'm going to jump back to the international front for a second. This coming to us from Canada, a tweet by New Granada 1979. Report, no longer about health. Canada will prevent groups from gathering in order to stop the spread of, wait for it. When I say it again, Canada will prevent groups from gathering in order to stop the spread of, not disease. Oh no, not disease. Unauthorized information. Canada will prevent groups from gathering in order to stop the spread of unauthorized information, quote unquote. And you can look at the video that's posted there. I'm going to post this up on Facebook, a link to it as well. So unauthorized information, you mean somebody challenging the prevailing narratives that have actually been proven untrue over time already? Like what we said last year is now being proven true. That what COVID-19 was escaped from a lab. Now, we don't know exactly the circumstances, but it came from a lab and was essentially a failed bioweapon. And the Chinese, according to several news stories, are trying to develop a genetic-specific virus. In other words, a racially-specific virus targeting non-Chinese. An ethnic-specific virus targeting non-Chinese. And these reports have been pretty much all over the internet. And so now you have an article out there about this new this new Delta variant. This was on MSN. The Delta variant coronavirus has forced a growing number of countries to reimpose lockdowns. Not only are they trying to reimpose lockdowns that way, they're also trying to trying to float the idea of a climate change lockdown, and they're citing the Pacific Northwest as an example because it's hot outside for a few days. All right, here's what I want to highlight with this. You start challenging the prevailing narrative of climate change, prevailing narrative of socialism, the prevailing narrative of critical race theory, the prevailing narrative of this whole COVID thing. And suddenly, that's unauthorized speech, and now you can't meet as a group. Now, U.S. Constitution, the First Amendment says we have a right of peaceable assembly that actually is a right that comes from God, not the Constitution. We do not have constitutional rights. I want you to hear that again. We do not have constitutional rights. We have constitutionally protected rights because they come from God already. They exist outside of a piece of paper. And one of those is to peaceably assemble. And so now we're seeing it attacked in our neighbors to the north. We're already seeing this assailed here. And this brings me to the next thing on the national front, coming to us from the New American. Mao lives. January 6th defendant required to confess her sins for leniency. Anna Morgan Lloyd, a 49-year-old from Indiana, got the same message that was delivered to Chinese dissidents and bad elements during Mao's great proletarian cultural revolution. Confess to thought crimes, embrace the state-sanctioned ideology, and you will be shown mercy, writes commentator Thomas Lifson, accurately. In the case of Morgan Lloyd, the Message was delivered to her by her own defense lawyer, a public defender paid by taxpayers, and it worked. She received 3 years probation, a $500 fine, and no incarceration beyond the 2 days she had spent in jail following her arrest. That's if she was not working for the FBI, right? Of course. All right, so we don't know that yet. What we do know is she was asked to confess her sins. And these were called in Mao's China shaming session. They would literally hang a board around people's necks. They would have them confess. Her sins. And oh, also, she had to read a book list. She had to read Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, Just Mercy. She had to read Schindler's List and educate herself about the awful things that the U.S. government has done over the years. Guys, what this is straight up communism. Has the federal government messed stuff up? Yeah, and we've, on this show, called them on it. But we actually love limited government. Government limited, bound by the shackles of the Constitution, as Thomas Jefferson said. What this is turning into is blatant communism. Forcing people through shaming and re-education to try to change their views. I'm going to post that article up as well. See it for yourselves. Incredible. We are in a very serious situation right now. Because once they try to shut off the ability to assemble and the ability to speak, the next thing that they try to come for is guns. Coming to us from andmagazine.com. And that's a fantastic new news source, by the way, if you haven't found it. The Biden administration, the pretender, is trying to double down on a direct assault on the right of Americans to own firearms. Now, this right comes from God. No government can ever take it away. No bureaucrat can take it away. Missouri has recently stood up against this push. And as a result, the U.S. Department of Justice fired a warning shot off in the form of a letter advising the state that federal law was paramount and that the state would be required to follow along whether it liked it or not. The letter also reminded Missouri of the federal aid that it received in various forms, suggesting that all such assistance would be on the chopping block if the state did not get in line to do as it was told. Legislation is now pending before Congress that would prohibit the sale, manufacture, transfer, and importation of 205, quote, military-style assault weapons, end quote, by name, and ban magazines that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. All right, I just want to highlight a couple things. When I was in the legislature, the one thing that I really tried to do is break the state off of these strings with the federal government, because this is the threats that get put in front of people, and they say, oh, we got to do it. I heard county commissioners, conservative county commissioners in Eastern Washington, cave and compromise. And I'm not just talking about failing to bring up the Liberty State vote. I'm talking about these people caved and compromised on issues solely because they thought they were going to lose money. And I introduced something called the federal tax escrow account, which would say that the states put this in this escrow account. And if federal government does something that is not constitutional, then they would withhold the funding. And actually, that's what happened 120 years ago, before the Federal Reserve, before the 16th Amendment, before the 17th Amendment, there was a sense that the federal government was an agent of the states, not the other way around, for most of the history of this country. It's the pretender and the Marxists are trying to turn that on its head. And that's exactly what the socialists did in Germany, the National Socialists did in Germany, try to turn it on its head, 1934, when they abolished essentially the states of Germany. And that was the first year of Hitler's power. And look what happened there. So the states as a check against all this is critical. And what I think we're going to see happen is states are going to begin banding together to help defend each other. We've been talking about this on the show ever since Shelby Gallagher came out with her book, A Great State, that the states will band together to push back on this, and that's exactly what has to happen. But one of the things that also has to happen is they've got to wean themselves off of federal money. And the more independent states can be, the more freedom there is at the local level. All right, now on the regional front, talking about Avista, there have been rolling blackouts. Now, they're saying that these are grid protection blackouts. But it has been liberal policies, socialist policies, that have intentionally destabilized the grid. Now, I know that there has been a huge spike in power use that's very abnormal because very likely most people are staying at home working remotely while the buildings downtown are still being cooled. But either way, we live in one of the most power-rich areas of the world. With our hydroelectric power, we have nuclear power. We live in one of the best places in the entire world, and we're having rolling blackouts? I don't care. It's a combination of bad regulation, out-of-control bureaucrats, this environmental push, which really isn't about the environment, it's about power and control, that is helping to destabilize the grid. And when we were in the legislature, we talked about this, that we were headed for grid instability by 2028, but we could see it as soon as next year. Well, that was 2 years ago. We should always have a buffer. It doesn't matter. We should always have a buffer, especially in an area of the country like this. And just one more reason that these pretenders and Marxists throughout Washington State and the rest of this country need to be voted out of office and never allowed to do this again. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. And make sure you go to Gab, We Speak, MeWe, Twilight, MAGABook, and there's a whole bunch of other ones that are coming too, like Frank Speech. We just got to get on there. And Patriot Radio is rebroadcast across the entire American Christian Network, Eastern Washington, North Idaho, Northeast Oregon, every Tuesday and Thursday evening as well at 9 o'clock. You can also find the podcast on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and Amazon. All right, it is my pleasure to introduce for the first time on Patriot Radio, Patrick Quebec. He is a former state senator from Michigan, and he has been at the forefront of uncovering some of the election fraud that has been going on throughout the not just Michigan, but the entire country. And his website is Let's Fix Stuff. I love that. Let'sfixstuff.org. Thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Patrick, how are you doing?
Oh, just ginger peach. How you doing, Matt?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's been quite an experience.
It has. We are in bizarro world right now, aren't we?
Absolutely, and it's been like that for quite some time. Even before the election, we saw storm clouds brewing on this front because of all the lockdowns and special rules that were being put in place regarding COVID. And, you know, we decided we need to ramp up since well before the election, and we formed a group called the Election Integrity Fund to go off and train poll challengers. And, frankly, a lot of the data that we've got around the election fraud came as a direct result of that preparation. So that's... you know, God kind of gave us a little bit of a warning there, and we took advantage of it.
Now, one of your recent articles, you say, quote, election fraud evidence is undeniable, widespread, and significant, end quote. Now, I agree with you, but there are a ton of people out there in the mainstream media that say that is just a conspiracy theory. Let's talk about that right now.
Well, I'd love to conspire to move on with my professional life instead of chasing conspiracy theories right now, but the fact is it's true. And I was actually a poll challenger at the TCF Center in Detroit. So many of your listeners may have heard about these panel vans being dropping off ballots in the middle of the night at 3:30 in the morning. I was there. And they may have seen the scenes around pizza boxes over the windows while they're counting military ballots and transposing them from one format to another. Well, I was there. I was one of the poll challengers that was blocked from reentry into the facility. So if you want to know why I'm so passionate about it, that's why. And I've been collecting or been kind of center of gravity for all the evidence in Michigan, collecting all that evidence and sharing it with anybody who will listen and making sure they had access to it. I've cataloged it up at letsstickstuff.org. And I think one of the posts there that is most recent is something called the Election Evidence Fraud or Election Fraud Evidence Primer, and in there I have a little palm card that I distribute out through the state, and now people are taking it into other states and sharing it, like at the Trump rally out in Ohio recently. And all it does is list all of the evidence that the naysayers say doesn't exist, and it provides a list of the chain of custody violations, all the statutes that were violated here in the state of Michigan, all the constitutional violations, and then another category of influence ops. And on my website I provide links to the actual testimony and reports and exhibits and court cases that actually support those assertions.
So you said something, influence operations. I want to start there. They are trying to very. I served in the Army, and I understand that you served as well. And I hope my information is correct.
No, I was just a contractor. No.
A contractor.
I took my oath in the Michigan Senate, not to prepare for battle.
Well. The Michigan Senate probably was a big enough battlefield anyway.
You don't know the half of it.
So I was in the Washington State Legislature and as well. And I want to highlight this word you use, influence operations. They are trying to dominate the news cycle with just pure distraction. That's what that is their intent, to get everybody knowing 2,000 irrelevant facts instead of what really matters. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I actually have been playing around with a little contest that we put out at letsstickstuff.org. It was, how's the media going to try to distract us when the results of the Arizona audit come out? And so I put up a little contest. You know how you have Super Bowl contests where you go off and try to figure out what the score is going to be at the end of each quarter? Well, in this case, I replaced that whole construct with, what's the media narrative going to be to cover up the Arizona audit? Is it going to be viral puppy videos? Is it going to be... you know, an example of the next variant of COVID. What are they going to use to go off and try to distract us while they come out with substantive information about this election fraud that's undeniable because it was done via forensic audit? And so, this whole idea of influence op, you say it very well. I mean, the way I usually communicate it is they have complete air superiority right now. They dominate the traditional news media, the cable news outlets. They dominate the social media. And all the everything technology-wise with big tech, they dominate it, and to the point where anytime one of our little truth planes decides to taxi out on the tarmac here, it gets bombed into submission. So our challenge right now is via shows like yours. You're right on the front lines here, whether you like it or not. Now you're right on the front lines of this information war right now, and I'm just one of those folks that's just struggling to get out the truth about what we actually saw firsthand.
Well, for the record, I'm choosing space aliens and power outage. That's what I'm choosing is their distraction.
Obviously, we need to have a little bit of fun on all this because I swear I've been at this nonstop since I stepped down as CEO of the Michigan Armed Forces Hospitality Center back in July of last year. And we have something called the Freedom Center out at our airports and our military entrance processing stations that I used to head up as a hospitality center. And I said, you know, the best way to defend freedom right now is by defending the integrity of our elections. And we have to do this. There's nothing else more important from my perspective. This was a, I believe it was a coup, and it needs to be treated as such, and we need to hold those who implemented this accountable.
I do too. I want to define some terms before we get into actual evidence right now. Let's talk about first, what is a forensic audit? That term is thrown around, but a lot of people I don't think understand what that actually means.
Well, I'm working on a formal post and going into the detailed definition of it soon. But the bottom line is the difference between a forensic audit and an audit is that it's of sufficient rigor to be entered into a court of law. And the way I like to explain it is that usually I try to differentiate between a recount and an audit, is that an audit, in particular a forensic audit, when you have the IRS involved, when they go off and do an audit of your 1040 form, they're not simply asking you to go in and re-add the cells in your 1040. They're asking you to provide a paper trail and document exactly how you got the entries you put onto that 1040. That's the sort of rigor that we expect in a forensic audit. And that's what they're doing out in Arizona right now. And that's why I'm really proud of them. They're doing a really good bang-up job on making sure that they're dotting the I's and crossing the T's on chain of custody, which is a very, very important term when it comes to elections. And so if you can demonstrate that chain of custody is maintained, you've got the materials necessary to go off and support exhibits in a court of law, which makes it forensic.
Okay, let's talk about evidence. Here in Washington State, we brought up last summer that we had discovered, and it was very easy, actually, to take the change of address database that the U.S. Postal Service has and compare it with the voter rolls and say, hey, look, we've got a bunch of people on the voter rolls that shouldn't be there. And we have, of course, a Republican, so-called Secretary of State here in Washington. We brought that up. Nothing happened. Let's talk a little bit about qualified voters for a state. Talk to the listeners a little bit about that and what you've discovered.
All right. Well, first of all, the reason this is important, because it's one of the key election records in the election chain of custody. And just like in a criminal case, if you violate the chain of custody, you for the evidence that you're presenting in the court case, you throw out the case. Well, and the same thing should be true of an election. If you can't demonstrate that the chain of custody was maintained for all these key election records, then you throw out the whole case. So one of the first links in that chain of custody for an election is something called a qualified voter file. At least that's how they refer to it in Michigan. It's essentially a statewide voter registration database that contains a list of all the people in that state that are eligible to vote and how you verify their identity. And in Michigan, we already identified that, similar to what you identified, we've got out of 8.2 or 8.1 million voters that were on our voter registration file for last election. We just doing a voting age population analysis, we determined that there's over 616,000 of them that should not be eligible to vote. And why is that a concern? Well, if you got a bunch of fake voters in there that are not eligible to vote, well, that gets into the next link in the chain of custody, which is the poll book. The poll book is nothing but a precinct-specific extract of the statewide voter registration database. And if you've got garbage in the qualified voter file, you're going to have garbage in the poll books. And why is that important? Because it's the poll books that poll workers use to determine who should get a ballot and who doesn't get a ballot. If you're not in that poll book, you're not supposed to be able to get a ballot and cast a vote in the election. And if you get past that gateway, well, guess what? In Michigan, you tear off that ballot stub that connects the ballot to the voter when you throw it in that ballot machine. So there is no way after the fact, via recount or anything like that, to determine whether or not that ballot was cast by a real voter or a fake voter. And so that gets into the next link of the chain of custody, which is the ballot itself. And if you can't maintain chain of custody around that ballot, and you can't verify where that ballot actually came from, you're in a whole world of hurt, because there's a lot of bad guys out there that like to stuff ballot boxes with votes from their favorite candidate. And then that leads to the last link in the chain of custody, which is that of vote tallies. And that's what everybody's staying up late in the night to go off and watch. And if you've got the ability to go off and manipulate those vote tallies, like a lot of our electronic voting systems allow you simply to replace database A with database B that contains the results of that election that you'd like, it's simply a matter of going back and reverse engineering all the other data leading to that point to make sure it looks like it makes sense. And you can do that whenever you're connected to things like the internet. So that's kind of chain of custody 101, if you will, and qualified voter file, that's where it all starts. If you break that, everything downstream is broken as well.
And it looks like in each one of these parts that there was a very clear suspicious, not only activity, but suspicious amount of errors or voters that were phantom voters or voters that were ineligible to vote. And I want to focus on one specific thing. Since Washington State has had mail-in voting for 10 years now, we've been fighting it for a long time. One of the things that we discovered was scans of the ballots had error rates. And then also the second thing, and you've mentioned this in yours, and I want you to talk about that. The second thing was unsupervised duplication of ballots. We discovered that, and they actually ordered the original ballots destroyed so we could not compare them. This was 10 years ago. So what did you discover in Michigan?
Well, in Antrim County, which got a lot of error early on because it was one of the few places where we actually got access to the Dominion voting machines, and we were able to take images of what actually happened, and it was used to help explain a vote switch. In Antrim County, which was historically an extremely red county, on Election Day, the initial results came out as if Joe Biden had won, and as it turned out, there was about a 7,060 vote flip of Trump votes to Biden votes. That was eventually corrected, so to speak, and it was attributed to clerical error. But upon further investigation, we had a group called the Allied Security Operations Group with Russell Ramsland and his team that came out to Antrim County, did a forensic analysis of the data on the machines, and determined that the tabulators had an error rate on the order of 68%. Now, why is that important? Well, first of all, the Federal Election Commission sets the standard for accuracy at one error in every 250,000 attempts, right? And so it's a little bit higher than that. And so it's not meeting that error rate. And when you have an error, here's what happens. You go to a process of, if you have an automated adjudicator or you have an electronic adjudicator, goes through an adjudicator workstation. If you do this manually, it goes through a spoil and duplicate process, which gets to what you were talking about, where all of a sudden, you know, there's a problem reading that ballot. It couldn't allocate the votes on the ballot. So now you get a human in the loop that's going to transpose the data from a bad ballot to a quote-unquote good ballot. So in other words, you know, if you're at the polls, it's no big deal. You send it back to the voter, and they go off and replace it. But if you're not at the polls, who does that? Are they doing it in a supervised manner? Is there a Republican and a Democrat supervising that spoil and duplicate process? Well, we don't have evidence of that in Antrim County. And so that 7,060 vote flip that happened, we don't have anybody monitoring that. And then, to make matters worse, you know, I talked about the pizza boxes over at TCS Center in Detroit where I was there. Well, why that's problematic is that's when they were counting the military ballots, and all the military ballots come in a non-standard format, which requires a spoil and duplicate process. They take the military ballot format and then transpose the votes and the voter intent onto another ballot that can be fed into the scanner. Well, they deliberately chose that time to ban us from reentry and being able to watch what happened. There's 503 mm-hmm. precincts in the city of Detroit. We were only able to cover about 12 of them with the volunteers that were allowed into that facility at that time. And, you know, as you might imagine, anybody with Trump derangement syndrome is going to be really hard-pressed to transpose a Trump vote on the spoiled ballot to a Trump vote on the new ballot.
And that is where a lot of this, I believe, occurred. So what's the next step? Now we're starting to see some things begin to bubble out of Arizona. What is the next step if this can be proven? And has this actually been proven in a court of law? I've heard in several places that no courts have taken this up. This is totally false. It's never been proven. But actually, that's really not true. And then also, what is the next step?
Yeah, it's definitely not true. Out of the 24 cases that have been decided on the merit of the evidence, 17 have been in favor of election fraud. There's a lot of court cases that were dismissed on process. And that's court cases that refuse to be taken up by judges. So, yeah, it's another one of those big lies being pushed by the folks with air superiority, right? They have the megaphone, and they're going to go off and drown out anybody who tries to bring logic and reason into the discussion. So that's part of the issue. What was the other part? I'm sorry, Matt.
Yeah, no, it's no problem. What's the next step? Now the stuff is beginning to bubble out of Arizona. What happens next?
All right, well, in Michigan, we had a court case that could have ordered a forensic audit. That's what it was requesting. That was the Antrim County case. A motion to dismiss by the Michigan Secretary of State and the Antrim County Clerk was approved by the Judge Kevin Elsenheimer in the 13th Circuit Court in Michigan on the basis that the relief had already been granted. In other words, they said that an audit has already been done. It wasn't done, but that's what the judge stated, and it was there's a long story that goes into that. So the thing that we still need in Michigan is a true forensic audit of the election. And there's been about 10,000 certified affidavits that have been submitted to our elected officials in Michigan demanding that. And we have a constitutional right to an audit of statewide election results per our Michigan Constitution. So that's going to get some traction. And matter of fact, we actually have a legislator, Representative Steve Carr, has introduced legislation to do just that, conduct a forensic audit. So we are starting to move into that direction. So there's both a judicial thread, which is right now going through appeal to the appeals court in Michigan, and then there's a legislative thread. And just for reference, the state of Arizona, there was a citizens group that put forward 150 of these certified affidavits demanding an audit, and the Arizona legislature listened to them. In Michigan, we're up around 10,000 already, and it's still growing. I think it's going to be growing all summer. So those are two threads to get to the forensic audit. Once the forensic audit comes forward, now you're going to have undeniable evidence of election fraud or that there's no election fraud. One way or the other, you're going to have that if you conduct a true forensic audit. That becomes grounds for decertification of the election. And with decertification of the election, opens up the writs of, based on, if you decertify it based on fraud, it opens up a little legal term called writs of quo warranto, which essentially says, okay, you illegitimate office holder, show us proof that you should be in office. And because you just conducted that forensic audit and disproven their legitimacy to be in office, they are removed from office legally.
Is that or can that possibly happen? And what about the President of the United States? I mean, I just don't see the pretender sitting there in the White House leaving willingly. I don't see him doing that. Where does this end up? Does this end up in a constitutional crisis?
The good news for Joe Biden is that I think we could just direct him to a stage somewhere in Hollywood and he wouldn't even know the difference. So
right.
I'm not too worried about him. And frankly, obviously a little bit tongue-in-cheek on that, but it's not easy. All the easy options that we have had to reconcile this since November 3rd are gone. Every single step that could have been taken along the way, whether it's the certification of the votes at the state level or whether or not it's the false flag event that happened up in D.C. on January 6th to distract us from what should have been done in regards to decertification of the vote then, all those easy steps have been missed. All the attempts to get the attention of the Supreme Court of the United States have failed. So we're left with terra incognita. This is new territory for us in America. The idea of decertifying an election, calling for a revote, is not new territory, but on this scale, it definitely is. I mean, even in this last election cycle, there were calls for revotes by courts in Mississippi and New Jersey. Now, this is obviously going to be a much larger scale, but the U.S. Constitution, Article 2, gives plenary authority to the state legislators regarding the elections in their state and the certification of electors. There's nothing that says that they can't withdraw their electors that were submitted and then call into question the election and the legitimacy of our current occupant of the White House.
And this brings up kind of the other point here, that they had a plan in case all of this failed. I had former National Security Council strategic planner Rich Higgins on the show. We talked about the Transition Integrity Project report at length.
Yes.
What are they going to do as this, and what are you hearing as this comes out, as this moves forward, because the truth is coming out? What are they going to try to do to fall back maybe on that plan of the Transition Integrity Project?
Well, you saw my attempt at that scorecard and the predictions for space aliens and viral puppy videos. They're going to do everything they can to distract us from what actually is going on and the reasoning and logic behind our arguments. That's they'll call us names. They'll make spurious lies. And ultimately, we just got to stay focused on the end game and be truthful with everything that we assert. And I'm one of those folks. My faith in Christ is such that I know that the truth will come out sooner or later. And one of the reasons why myself and other people are so bold when it comes to asserting this election fraud is that we've got it's kind of an analogous to what happened with the old gospel story, right? You had a bunch of apostles that swore their allegiance to Christ. They go off, and it's like they swore an oath to the Constitution to defend it. They swore an allegiance to Christ, in this case, in context of the gospel story. Yet when the soldiers came out to the Garden of Gethsemane, they all ran around like chickens. And then when Christ finally came to them after he was resurrected, he found them all huddled up and cowering in fear. Christ and Peter himself denied him three times. But after they saw the truth of the resurrected Christ, they were talking smack to that same Sanhedrin boldly, and they were testifying to that truth, not caring what the repercussions were. There's a lot of people all across this country right now that are in that boldness category right now. They've seen the truth, and they're not going to let go until that truth is exposed and acknowledged and reconciled in the people that we currently have in office.
This is the kingdom of Christ. This is what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to sit there with a bag of popcorn watching stuff happen. We're actually supposed to be out there in the fight and standing up, not just for the Republic, but I really believe this is an attack on Christendom as a whole. And I see a lot of people standing up right now. So in the last couple minutes, continue on that vein of an encouraging word that, you know, this is what the enemy's plan is. But there is a whole lot moving in the background that people don't know about, and God is on the move.
Yeah, well, I like to highlight that this last election cycle wasn't about Republicans versus Democrats. It wasn't about Trump versus Biden. It literally was between those who want to fundamentally transform America and those who want to fundamentally preserve all that is noble, true, and excellent and praiseworthy about America. And ultimately, it's a spiritual battle. It's not against flesh and blood. The people that are opposing us, most of them have just been deceived because of what we were mentioning around these influence ops and the idea that they're not even getting the truth about what actually happen. And so I want to give people encouragement. Actually, if you got your pens out, everybody, we actually have a prayer call every single night at 9 o'clock. And it's been going on nonstop for over 240 days straight now. People call in from all over the country. And if you want to join us, you can call in. And here's the number. It's 727-731-2247. Once again, that's 727-731-2247. You can join us on that prayer call. There's literally thousands of people that chime in, and we're just praying for deliverance, praying for the truth to be exposed, praying for specific events that pop up on the calendar that we need help on. So I know it's in Michigan and some Michigan focus, but there's people from all over the world chiming in as well.
Amen. Well, I really appreciate that and appreciate your fight and your tenacity and your perseverance. Where can people go to find out more information, maybe even sign up?
Oh, yeah. If you can go to letsfixstuff.org, we'd appreciate anybody that can support us. This is what I'm doing full time. So we're keeping the lights on at home with $4.99 month subscriptions to the site. But really, it's just the purpose of that site is just to get out information. We knew social media and big tech was going to be shutting down people. We wanted to have an avenue to get out this information. And you can get that information at letsfixstuff.org. Check it out for yourself, and please share it with your friends and family. If they want to see that evidence of election fraud, it is all out there and for the taking. So please join us out there.
All right, Patrick, thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. I really appreciate you. Keep up the fight.
Hey, thank you very much, my friend. Knock 'em away.
All right. Patrick Kobach, he is a former state senator from Michigan. He also has the website, letsfixstuff.org, letsfixstuff.org. I'm going to post that up there along with the number for the prayer call they do every night at 9 o'clock. I presume that's Central Time. And he has detailed, in fact, I love it because he took a military approach to breaking this down, a detailed list of the proof of election fraud and the actual facts of what has and has not won in court, in addition to the specific Michigan laws and federal laws and the constitutional basis for decertifying an election. This site answers so many questions, it's incredible. So letsfixstuff.org, go there, take a look at it. And also, you can take what he's done and then compare it here in Washington. And as we were going down those links in the chain of custody, we've talked about those with Glenn Morgan from We the Governed before, that this should have been very simple. What was the verified or qualified voter rolls for Washington State? Were there any ineligible voters? And the answer to that was, of course, yes. And it was very simple to find them. And that was just using the United States Postal Service change of address file. There's many more than that to just start the chain of custody right. And then continuing down, what is the security of the ballots from the ballot box to the election office? What is the process and what was the error rate for the scanning of ballots? And you heard that the standard is supposed to be 1 in 250,000, and they were running at a 68% error rate in Antrim County. That's incredible, folks. And we didn't even get into the electronic part of this and what was actually transmitted potentially from the voter machines outside and if whether they were connected to the internet. We didn't even get into that. We're just going just in the basic chain of custody, and there's already significant and dramatic problems. And if you compare what he has on his site to Washington State, I think you will be very enlightened. And this is something that we can use to stand against the rhinos and against the Marxists to save the republic. This is Matt Shea. Thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may he truly make this generation the greatest one. And to do that, it's going to take all of us right now to stand. Keep up the fight.